Like, I have a friend who's Jewish and Ashkenazi. She would just be like, how do people not know you're Jewish? Like, just like, from how I communicate, how I act, you know?
Shalom and welcome to Rivkush, the CJN podcast with Jews of color talking about anything Jewish, Israel, whatever we wish.
It's time we talk about more than just the tragedy, the hardships we've overcome and the savagery. It's time we focus on what's woven in the tapestry, the roots that connect us to our truth and the canopy of every single branch.
Today, my special guest is Sarah Kolker. Sarah Kolker is a graduate of the Sarah Lawrence College and the Moore College of Arts and Design. She was born and raised in Philadelphia and has this creative, extensive experience forming learning environments for youth in Philadelphia, Jamaica, San Francisco Bay Area, and New York City. Her use of art and social justice educational practices have been employed both in the private and public institutions. She's currently the director for J Kid for All. So please join me in welcoming Sarah. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you, Rivka. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. I have a question right off the top, even though no one can really see it. Is that your art in the background?
It is, yeah.
Oh.
That's a small part of a mural that I designed.
Oh, my goodness. I have to admit, I have this, I'm going to say envy of people who are like super creative, especially with art. During COVID, I tried to become an artist. So I do have work around the cottage, but it is nothing as spectacular as the piece that I'm looking at of yours.
Thank you. As I tell my students, it's all about practice.
Yeah, that I can see. I have learned some cool techniques. Some of my work looks like, hope I get his name right, Jackson Pollard.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock, sure. With the splatter paint.
Yes. I become very fond of splatter paint.
It's fun. It's a good way to relieve some stress, I'm sure.
It really, really is. Anyways, I'm so glad you were able to join me today. And I just want to find out who you are. You know, it's very easy, if you wish, to read about a person and glean their biography, but it really just tells a very small piece of who you are, right?
Sure.
And one of the things I'd like to know is how do you mirror or how do you combine your art and social justice work and education?
Sure. So for a very long time, I have worked with Mural Arts Philadelphia, which is the largest public art program in the nation. And I worked in communities, finding out what communities need, what they want to honor, what they want to support to design together public works of art. And we've seen that public works of art help with crime and litter and all sorts of social issues. And just having people involved and engaged makes them more active in their communities.
Can you elaborate on how it helps with crime? I think you said crime and litter.
Sure.
I kind of figure out the litter bit, but the crime bit?
Sure. So this is actually, it gets to be a tricky question. I have a lot of friends who are social justice orientated, whether in their film projects or protests. And they've asked me questions about how does mural arts contribute to gentrification? And so I think this kind of ties in there a little bit. But I've been with art education program for, 10 years off and on. And we're supporting youth in after-school programming, in-school programming, teaching them to, go deeper into these talents and to figure out solutions and find alternatives. And so that is just one way of these students finding paths that are not that direction. So that's one way of doing it. Okay. But also in the actual present, when people see that their communities are cared for, that people care mm-hmm. for their communities, that people are showing up. I just did a mural 2 summers ago with my neighbor in the local park, which is a park that I grew up I used to not go into the park at all. There was a summer camp that we ran 1 year, but it was definitely a park that my mom did not send me to alone. But when we were walking one day, when I came back and moved back to the neighborhood, my mom was like, this old pavilion really needs some sprucing up. You should get your boss to have you do a mural here. And so with some petitioning, community meetings, and just some right timing, I guess, I managed the project and painted it with my friend and neighbor. And with that, there was meetings with politicians, community members, block captains. Now the park is having these festivals. They're having there's more lighting in the park. There's more police, like I wouldn't say monitoring per se, but the police are aware of what's going on in the community. Right. There's just so much more attention given to this space once the art had been brought there. I mean, not saying that things were not happening already. The Friends right. of the Park and the neighborhood were definitely very active, but just placing this attention, we did questionnaires, we met with community members, and then I had to meet with politicians. I had to bring politicians into the conversation. And then we got funding for other parts of the park. And it keeps growing. Now we're designing another space. We got a grant. And so I just think that all of these things in connection and really having it community focused, it creates other avenues and directs people. It just feels like a better place to be in.
Right, right. And like you said, when people love the space they're in, they're going to care for the space they're in.
Mm-hmm. And they really see people showing up.
Yeah, yeah, that is incredible. How hard was it to get people on board, such as politicians, et cetera? Because we're also talking funds, we're talking resources. How challenging was that?
So one thing about Mural Arts is that it's city and private funding. So really, the city funding can be directed to projects that need when there's a community backing. And because I partnered with the Friends of the Park group, I'm a local resident of the neighborhood. I got another artist who is a local resident. They had a small amount of funds from a grant that they had put in. The funding was made available. So that was the first thing. Funding is usually a really hard part, especially yeah. when we're doing high quality paint that's going to last. It's not going to chip off, that we're sealing it. We have people power washing it. But then it's also like the neighborhood, we had a few people in Senate who like, me and politics, it's like my left and my right as an artist, left and right was hard for me to figure out for a long time in my life. I still have to like wear something around my wrist and like different positions of like political office.
Right.
Doesn't really stick for me. I'm right. like, I know that I get they it. Work in this part of the, I don't know. It's just, I know that there are politicians. But we had different people who were already in the neighborhood. And so it was, once they saw that the neighborhood was involved, they knew they had to jump on because it looked better for them, first of all.
Yes.
But then also this is also their neighborhood. There's also politicians that live in this neighborhood, that knew and saw how much it was impacted. At first, they were like, they thought there was going to be problems. We had all these meetings where the politicians were like, no, we're not, we want to move this pavilion because there's activity happening. And we're like, well, we're trying to mitigate that nighttime activity from yes. happening by putting in lights, making it a more beautiful space. And so, like, who's also funding a whole pavilion being, like, knocked down
moved.
And moved into the middle of a park?
Exactly.
That's not a part of our funding. So we got to work with what we have. And so
yeah.
after, like, community members understood that and saw that, and they were like, oh, well, this is what we need to fix right now. And then the politicians were like, yes. And they came and they spoke at our dedication. And then there's other parts of the park that got more alive. And it's just different pieces are getting activated. Again, I don't know if this was the catalyst. I can't say that, but it's definitely a large part of the overall process.
It sounds like it really was. As someone listening from the outside, it really sounds like it was. And also, I think it's really cool that you've changed something from your childhood also, if that makes any sense. Now the park uh-huh. that you weren't allowed to go to alone is now a safe spot. So you've seen the progression and the rebirth of that park, so to speak, which is you and your mother, I would presume, too.
And it's lovely because I'm raising my children. I'm raising my children here, so it's fantastic.
It's been like generational change. It's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. So does your, just flipping it a little, how does your Judaism inform what you do? And how do you see your Judaism as a little girl, as you grew up, how do you see it?
So, as you said, I'm currently the director of J-Kid for All, which I'm going to get into a little bit. But
yes, indeed.
I grew up in a very culturally Jewish family. We did not go to synagogue. The bat mitzvah thing was a big question that never ended up happening, which my mom really wants to do it with me and my daughter, who's actually having a quinceañera-themed birthday party in the synagogue. So we're very culturally diverse in my family. Like, my father's Jamaican, my mother's Ashkenazi. And so we have, and my daughter's father's Cuban. So we have a lot of stuff going on. But I went to, when I was growing up, Folkshall, which is a secular humanistic program where we met on Sundays and we learned the stories of the Torah. And we dressed up for Purim and we learned all the different things on the Seder plate for Passover. And so these were all a part of me growing up. It just was part of my identity. And I grew up mostly, my father was in Jamaica for most of my childhood. So I grew up mostly with my Ashkenazi family. So it was also the way I interact with people. Like, I have a friend who's Jewish and Ashkenazi, both parents. And she would just be like, how do people not know you're Jewish? Like, just like, from how I communicate, how I act, you know? Like, because maybe people see my face and they're like, oh, we don't know what you are. What are you? You're some sort of like Latino, exotic something we make up. But like, in the way that I interact, I think it's very like culturally Ashkenazi.
Yes, I hear you on that. So the Jamaican bit, because that's what we have in common, is good old Jamaica.
Yes.
And as an aside that you don't know about, one of my nephews, his father's Cuban, actually.
Nice.
So my sister, she would go to Cuba quite often so that he would get to know that side of the family. So I kind of get it.
It's a beautiful place.
How's your Spanish?
Más o menos. I don't even want to embarrass myself. My daughter would have a fit, but a lot of my friends, like, especially living in the Bay Area, Spanish is their first language. And so I can get around. I just was in Cuba in December with my son and they were okay.
You see, and I my Spanish is as good as my French, which is pretty sad considering I live in Canada, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Je parle un peu de français also.
Oh!
Took that in middle school.
Okay. Oh my goodness. So Jamaica, how are your ties with the land?
Yeah.
Because the diaspora is kind of strong.
I got my citizenship over the pandemic.
What?
Yes. So I am now a U.S. and a Jamaican citizen.
Lord of mercy.
Yes. And I'm very proud of it, except I'm like, it's not really doing its job, because last time I went in June, both my children just have American passports, so I had it. But I did get through a quicker line with my Jamaican passport once I got to the country. Yes, exactly. But I've been going since I was a little kid. My mom made sure, like, as a baby, I was going to the island, and then she would send me alone with the stewardess, and then I'd stayed with my dad, and then I went in college and I studied abroad there. So I studied at University of West Indies.
Shut the front door.
I studied gender studies and economics. So I studied the economy of the Jamaican people. I went to people political party meetings. I
was
on locks. I was a Ross at that
time.
So I was like very embedded. My father was like, you traveled this island more than most Jamaicans did.
For real.
And I really just... So, I mean, identity and culture are strong, very important to me. So it was very important for me to go there and live there. And
Sarah, I have no words. Like, you know, I kiddingly call myself a Jafakan. Now I'm like, no, girl, you are a Jafakan.
No. I mean, I can't speak like patois, like in me. Like,
oh.
I got a little book. I had a kid who, when I was little... He went, because I was on scholarship to a private school when I was in middle school, and these kids traveled everywhere. And I remember a kid coming back from Jamaica, and he had made all these friends, and he was speaking all this, like, like, just like, he sounded like Jamaican. And I was like, I can't do that.
Neither can
I. Understand, but I can't.
Likewise. Likewise, I try. I remember the last time I tried when I was in Jamaica, because I, like you, my family would send us to Jamaica for at least 1 month every year, and it was always August, which is kind of brutal.
Yes, very much so.
It's like, wow, this is the month you pick? But nonetheless, and I remember I went back as like a young adult, and I tried to bust out the patois, and the person just looked at me and kissed her teeth and said, you know you're foreign.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You're foreign.
It makes you feel some sort of way, doesn't it?
Because it does.
When we first got to UWE, when I was studying there, we went to like a set, like we went to a party to I was dancing with someone. And he was like, oh, you got pretty good moves for an American. And I was like, I'm Jamaican. He was like, you're American.
I know. And it kind of hurts. Because every Jamaican outside of Jamaica were like, of course we're Jamaican.
Yeah.
I'm Jamaican. And then you get there and you're like, no, you're not. It's like, but I tell everybody.
I'm so proud of it. Yeah. And I'm like, where's you see my Jamaican flag over there?
All right, you see? Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to speak to our fellow Jamaicans in Jamaica and say, look here, we're claiming you. You need to claim us.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's kind of funny. Have you had any interactions with the Jamaican Jewish community there?
No. So actually, when I found out about you for the talk that you had on Jews in Jamaica. You were talking about Chabad, and I had driven past it on my way out last time I stayed in the grill. And I was like, wait, what is that? And so now I'm like, I have all this interest. I was like telling my mom because she hasn't visited Jamaica for a long time. And so we're not, like I said, we don't go to synagogue very often or anything, but it's like, it would be great to know about.
Well, absolutely.
Great to visit.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it's interesting. You are Jewish, full stop. Your mom is Jewish, full stop. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of funny how we do tend to I don't want to say rate, but our Jewishness, do you go to synagogue or don't you go to synagogue?
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, I would argue there's a lot of us who don't.
I mean, that's true. And that's like, as a director of J-Kid for All, which I started in this position in September, I was a parent ambassador for the group for the past year and stepped into this position. It's been a program of Jewish Learning Venture, which is an educational program in Philadelphia and its surrounding areas. And it has a family-based education program called J-Kid Philly. And J-Kid Philly supports primarily families with children aged 0 to 12 in getting PJ Library books, if you're not familiar with them.
Oh, yes.
Yes, of course. I love PJ Library books. We have these initiatives that started a few years ago. J-Kid Access, which supports families with disabilities. J-Kid Pride, which supports families LGBTQIA. And then J-Kid For All, which supports families of Jewish families of color or non-traditional Ashkenazi normative families in programming and meetups or just serving the needs of the family, whatever they need. So it's been a lot of meeting these different families and finding it out. And it one of the things that my boss keeps reminding me is that a lot of our families don't go to synagogue. A lot of our families are just looking for different ways to tie Judaism into their daily lives. And so, you're right. I shouldn't be judging myself for not going to synagogue. Because I also do, I'm a practicing Ifa priestess of the Yoruba tradition, which I've seen connections of like my ancestry from my father's side, like I have Nigerian ancestry. And so I'm with my daughter's father. And so all of these things tie into who I am as a person, but I'm definitely at my core, Judaism is in my identity.
Absolutely. So we're not going to race past that.
I tried.
You tried, but you tried. I'll give you that. Please explain.
Okay. So, I mean, just to say, I have been very interested in different cultures. I took anthropology at Sarah Lawrence and was definitely learning about the different ways that Yoruba Ifa is come to different locations from Africa. When people were taken and enslaved from Africa, they brought their stories and their cultures with them to all these different locations. And a lot of times their practices were hidden and mixed with the other practices. So Santeria is mixed with Catholicism. We have Candomblé in Brazil. The one in Jamaica, I forget the name of. My family is not familiar with it, but there is a version of it. And then Lucami is Afro-Cubano. So there's all these different versions of the same storytelling base, ancestral worship, connecting to nature. And it's beautiful. And so I studied it a little bit in university. And then when I moved to California, I had very much believed in serendipity. I'm also a practicing yoga teacher, meditator, have studied Buddhism. And
you've got it together. But carry on.
I just love this. Like when I went to, I took my birthright trip to Israel, and I went on a special program for older youth where we went to Svat and we stayed and worked on bomb shelters. And it was just more spiritual. We did a lot of hikes in the desert. It was an extended program. And I almost moved to Svat. I was pregnant with my daughter.
Wow.
they partnered me with the exact right people, like a practicing Qigong master who had a community center, and the artist who did all of the sculpting of the clay wax in Svat. And so it was like they were trying to get me to move there. I was like ready, but I was like, I think I'm pregnant. I don't know. I was having visions of people being like, this is not the people's land. This is God's land. I was like, it was just such a spiritual, beautiful thing. That's a part of who I am. I love learning about culture. I love connecting to spirituality. And so back to my story. But I met my godparents, who I've now had this relationship with for, going on, I don't know, something over 10 years, more than that. And my godfather had been trying to get to Cuba on a visa for 23 years. It just so happened that right when we moved to California, he was able to get a visa, and I met my godmother and my godfather and was like, I studied this in university. I want a reading. I want to see what's going on with this. And it just opened doors. There's connections made. Like I learned my mother's partner, he's from Haiti. It turned out that me going deeper into this and learning that he expressed his family is so Voodoon in Haiti is the other version. I mean, the U.S. has, and all of these different Western gazes have made it voodoo and all these things it's not some Satan practicing.
Because that is how it comes off, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's actually called voodoo. And it's beautiful. It's connecting to nature. And I've connected closer with my stepdad, who was like, oh, my grandmother used to do that. And I thought they were Catholic growing up. I didn't know these things that were happening behind the pictures I'm jumping places here, but when I went to go visit my family, I have Jamaican family in Boston, and I went to go stay with my grandmother before she passed away. I just remember her praying. I was pregnant with my daughter, and she was praying in bed next to me. And it was just so beautiful because I didn't grow up with a lot of prayer per se with my mom. And so just the idea of prayers and intention, I feel like it makes everything more zinging with life. I just love that.
Right. Well, just hearing you speak about it really comes to mind how, to put a different thing on it, if you will, when you said Vodun, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Vodun. It's just voodoo, but with an N on the end.
Vodun. Yes.
Yeah.
Excuse me. As compared to voodoo, and to me, all I could think is, oh my gosh, they've actually almost racialized it.
Mm-hmm. It is. That's what it is.
It's mm-hmm. racialized. It's how is that different from other religions that may be more non-African based, who hold similar concepts, if you will. even within Judaism.
Sure, but like kosher and how we pray over the meat and cut it. It's the same exactly thing with how meat is taken care of.
Absolutely.
Or halal. Or even,
exactly. Or even go as far as, you know, you're talking about Sfat. Sfat is all about the spiritual, mystical, Kabbalistic part of Judaism.
Yes.
And yet, if I were to mention that, and also, I'm going to mispronounce it again, Vodun.
Well, Vodun is just the Haitian version.
Vodun. Okay.
So I would say Ifa or Yoruba, which Yoruba is a people, a language, but also a culture and a practice.
Right. And so if I were to mention that, it would be like,
but that's too far.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. It's like, that sounds like cultish. It sounds like devilish, but it really isn't. It's just a different way.
Yes.
It's just different. But it has been, I'll argue again, that it's been racialized. So, you know, because it came from enslaved people who were this and that and da-da-da. Wow. So how did that lead you, though, to becoming a priestess of such?
So with my initiations, there's initiations a part of it, but it just ended up, it's when I say that, it just means I'm practicing, like, in the sense that there's certain initiations that were given. And it'd be ideal if I knew more Spanish, because my godparents speak Spanish as their primary language. So there is, like, there's so many different ways that it's practiced also, because it's practiced, it's a storytelling. It's not, there are photos and stories that are written and passed down in that way, but people practice it so differently. I mean, just in the same way that Judaism is
Judaism
in so many different ways. So it's just been years and years of being a part of the tradition and it feeling like it's right for me and my family and the faith that comes with it. So it's when I think about, like, Judaism and God and that connection, like, I love learning about all of the ways that the Talmud and I am. Growing up, my mom's best friend, also Ashkenazi Jewish, who was married to an African-American man, and we were there all the time. So her daughters were my sister cousins. And but she was just so interested in learning. It was so beautiful. She would go to New York, and she was a part of the communist meeting group that they had. And there's, like, a picture that she kept in the dining room that whenever we would have our seders or we would have our, like, fish trays, and there was just in the corner, there was always a picture of one of the family friends pulling a cap off of a KKK member during one of their marches.
Wow.
And that lived in that corner, like, of this action. And I felt like that was so powerful of, like, how it was being raised. Like, that hate is not what we're playing around with. Like, we are of love. And she, like, at one point, I remember she read the Bible, the Quran, and the I don't know if it was the Torah or the Talmud or which Jewish book, but she read them all back, or she read them all back to back. Like, it was just, like, such a beautiful vision of, like, how we're, like, knowledge is important. We don't have, like, we are raised Jewish. Like, her father was in the Holocaust and was, like, always, like, I just remember the tattoos on, well, the imprints, you know, the brand, the, what is it called? The
tattoos. Yeah.
On his arm. And that discussion, like, that lived within our family, but it was also like, that doesn't mean that we can't study and know about other people, because that's beautiful to know about other people and to learn from other people.
And not to be so insular. That is, you've left me with a lot to think about. And it's interesting. Like, I had done this podcast with a woman who is both Jewish and Indigenous. And when it had started, I almost had a breakdown in a good way, because they started off with drumming. And as the drumming was happening, I finally got it. It sounds really strange, but we talk about our ancestors. We talk about our African ancestors, our Jewish ancestors. We talk about our ancestors. But in that moment of hearing the drumming and hearing his prayer, I was like, I get it. I get it. Like, I got it right in my gut, that connection to the ancestors. And I think that's part of, it's part of how I see Judaism. And it's also part of how we should see what connects us spiritually coming from where we come from. So, you know, I'm going to be looking into the Jamaica thing. I am definitely going to look into that, because that's, I guess as I get older too, I start to reflect more.
Yeah. And everything gets played out so differently, because you could see that one group is doing it this way, and that doesn't mean another group is doing it another way. And like, I just, through my work with J Kid for All, I was just speaking with a woman of the Uganda Jews and the community that they have there. And it's just so beautiful to learn about all the different ways that Judaism is practiced everywhere.
Exactly.
And that's like part of my role is bringing that to communities and having those conversations and bringing what is considered marginalized into the center. So people are aware that the European Ashkenazi way is not the only way that Judaism is or has been practiced for many years. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is something that it still boggles my mind, that even in the subtleties that that message comes across. Like, my favorite is when people say, when people list the favorite Jewish foods, and I'm like, well, that's maybe favorite Ashkenazi Jewish foods. You know?
Yeah.
I was a little rude one day on Facebook because somebody said, what unconventional item do you add to traditional Jewish foods? I put spices.
Yeah. I mean, that was my stepdad hot sauce.
Yeah, like, but it's like, my rice and peas is Jewish.
Yeah.
A Jew make it. Escovici fish. Created by Sephardi Jews.
Yes.
There's, you know, it doesn't have to be gefilte.
Well, and
if you like gefilte, you like it, but it doesn't have to be. So
I just started liking it as an adult, actually, but with lots of horseradish. But I actually just received a grant from the Jews of Color Initiative.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so the Jews of Color Initiative, I think it's Bay Area based, was offering grants to people to bring intergenerational connection among Jews of color because of rising numbers of loneliness and isolation among the population. They want to support programming and artistic practices. And so I applied with my organization, and I will be, and we focused it all on food and
awesome
and how different people and individuals, what we bring to the table, because we've already been at the table. And so making sure that young children who are Jews of color recognize and know that they are not a part of the table, that their history, they've always been at the table.
Absolutely. Ooh, I just got a chill thinking about that. You know who you should connect with if you haven't already? Michael Twitty.
Yeah, I bought his book, and we actually, so Jacqueline Jonas is going to be offering a workshop for adults coming up on April 7th, which will be she's going to focus on Sephardic cooking for Passover, and her Passover Seder that she intertwines African-American and Sephardic recipes in. And she will be, I believe, referencing Michael along with another Sephardic cooking author to help support the families, and we're going to have some good conversations, hopefully.
That's cool. And if I can self-promote for a little bit, my rice and peas recipe is in his Kosher Soul book cookbook.
I have that book downstairs. I'm going to have to go
check it out. Rivka Campbell's Rice and Peas, and I mentioned Jamaica. Yeah, you got to check it out.
That's exciting. I'm going to go check that out. I am Purim one year, I had a ton of rice and peas left over. So I decided to do this like vegan patty that I make out of lentils that are like a lentil meat type of thing. And so I took the recipe for the patty and turned it into an Hementaschen and had rice and peas Hementaschen one year. Felt very Jamaican Jewish.
That is awesome.
A Jamaican. Yep.
We're having a bake. Maybe I should like sneak some in. I can just see everybody's faces. Rivka, what is this? It's Jamaican.
Exactly. I have the patty recipe on my website. So
I'm going to check it out.
I was a chef at one point, and I like keep recipes on my website that are not my own per se, but they're like ones that I like and that I edit and I update. And so I keep it's called Food to Grow On, because I was going to actually open a restaurant one time, and then I realized how much work it was and how much the money did not come as quickly as I would like it to. And so I have left. I just keep the on my website, there's a link for Food to Grow On. It has all the recipes.
So, J Kid for All, when you first started working there, how, this is going to sound so strange, but because one of the things people always say are, where are Jews of color? We know where Jews of color are. Did you find that people found you? Like people... Am I articulating this well? You know what I'm trying to say.
So that's a good question, because I actually, Julia Weeks, who was the director of J Kid for All before I came into the position, she did a lot of, she is raising children, Jewish children of color. And she found a lot of people word of mouth or just being at programs and talking to people or people that she knew already. And one of the things that is happening is, a lot of people in my community will come to me and I'll be like, wait, you're Jewish too? Like, there's just so many people that are already part of my community that have added to the list myself. And Julia just recently, Julia has moved into director of professional learning. So she teaches teachers in Jewish community about teaching or supports them in teaching. And she met with a couple in the Midwest who wanted to start something like J Kid for All in their PJ library connection. They had received a small grant to help support the Jews of color there. And so I came into that meeting, and that was like her first question. Like, what do we do? Like, what should we do? And it's like, first of all, you have to talk. You have to have conversations. Like, what do these families want? Do they want to have an affinity group where they are meeting alone without the other conversations that are happening among white Jews or listening? Or do they want it to be collaborative? Do they want to be teaching or learning? And a lot of times they want to feel included in synagogue. And that's a lot of DEI work that has to happen on a larger, like a much larger level. And that has to have a lot of buy-in. And I just was speaking with one of the families at a recent game night event that we had, and what the work that she's doing in her synagogue, and how she's trying to have the synagogue understand the tie-in between the DEI work and where they put their funding. That if they really want to show up for Jews of color and have people feel included, that they need to use their funding to back that. And so there's that conversation, but there's also just, where are they? And then like, what do they want? And so it's really just getting out there. And like, I've done a lot of partner programs with local synagogues. I live in Northwest Philadelphia, which is very diverse already. And so going to local areas, local synagogues, there's one in West Philly that's very diverse. And I've just reached out to synagogue education directors or been connected to them. And they're like, well, we have these families, but we don't know if they consider themselves Jews of color, but we really feel like they would benefit. And I'm like, well, forward our newsletter to them so they can see the events going on and they can come and join. And most of the time that's how it happens, is that people come to our events, they seek us out, and they're like, we want our children to be a part of this. Or they're Ashkenazi white Jewish families who are adopted children who are black, and they want to feel like they are supporting their children properly. So we have like a Camp for All, where we had a panel a couple of years ago meeting with the different overnight camps so that they can talk to how they meet the needs of different populations. And I think we're going to try to do an updated one soon, but we're really just seeing what, like having meetings with families and what do they want? We just had a game night and everyone loved it. They're like, we want more of this. We want to just get together. We want to retreat. We want to hang out.
Yeah, just hang.
And so then also I'm just sharing information too. Like, just want to add one thing, like the like the trans racial or national adoptions. Like I will, I have, so I'm actually right now, it's in the process, or it's actually built, and I'm supposed to be looking at it right now. So I need to go do that when we're off this call. But a website education, a JOC education resource page on our website. So JKID Philly and Jewish Learning Venture has a list of resources on Jewish education and holidays. We do all these kits, holiday kits that show how different holidays are celebrated all around the world by Jews. And they have different games, activities, prayers that can be used with children. But now I'm adding a special page of resources that are primarily Jews of color. And I sent out a link because I want people to be able to send me resources. So of course you're listed as a podcast, and I have other podcasts that I'm including, but most of, I think they're not all Jewish related, but just like biracial. Right. And that's, I've sent that out to families. Like, even if you're not biracial and your children are biracial, hopefully you can listen and then help support your children from this. And
absolutely.
So really just sending out, because more knowledge is more, is knowledge is key.
Oh, that is fantastic. So I need that link.
Yes.
And it's funny. It's not funny. It's interesting that you mentioned, because when you said biracial, I always found it, I love that you were specific when you said you're not biracial, but your children are biracial, because sometimes there is this feeling I find where people feel that they understand their biracial children when you don't walk in those shoes.
Yep.
My children are biracial. I can't say I understand what it's like to be biracial because I am not. So it's awesome that you have those resources. And I also want to know, are synagogues and schools generally receptive? Do you feel that they are partners in this, or do you feel that they're, you know, it's a lot? It's a lot.
So it really depends. Like, we have done partner activities with a lot of organizations around the city. And we're actually trying to move in the direction where all of our programs are definitely more integrated and supportive of the mission of JKID for All, JKID Access, JKID Pride. But a lot of times, I mean, there's a couple of times that people want us to do programming for them, and that's not something we're necessarily going to do. Like, they can host, we can use the space, but like, we really are about supporting them to do their own programming or partnering where we're building the program together. And so, yeah, there are a lot of synagogues that are interested in the work that we're doing, because they know that we're also, like, we're the PJ Library connection here in Philadelphia, and that there's always great programming that is happening. And so our mailing list is really extensive, because it is most of the synagogues sending their people to us, because we're not taking the place of a synagogue.
Right.
We are just supporting the different families, whether they're in synagogue or not.
Okay. Sounds great. Well, Sarah, oh my gosh, this has been awesome. Hanging out with my Jamaican / Jafakan, just teasing my Jamaican sister. I have learned so much about you and the work that you're doing, and I think it's just awesome. And really and truly, keep me up to date, and I will disseminate the information to the synagogues in Canada also.
Yes, because please do.
I think it's, we have diversity here, even though sometimes it doesn't feel like it. And I think it's really an important initiative, so that everybody feels not just welcomed, definitely not just accepted, but as part of the family.
And they belong, yes.
Exactly. It's more of a belonging. So I think that's really awesome, the work that you're doing. And you've just had an incredible life.
Thank you. Hopefully a lot longer.
Of course. And I'm just thinking, maybe after this call, I'm going to work on my painting.
Good.
I still have all this stuff up here, so maybe I should. Anyways, again, I thank you so much, and all the best in everything you do. And please, 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 please keep me up to date.
Will do.
RivKush is hosted by me, Rivka Campbell. We're produced and edited by Michael Freeman. Our theme music is by Westside Gravy. We're proudly sponsored by the Canadian Race Relations Foundation and hosted by the CGN Podcast Network. If you like this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. To support our work and everything else the CJN does, visit the cjn.ca/donate to make a monthly donation and receive a charitable tax receipt. Thanks for listening. Scattered in the wind, never scattered too thin, to remember where we come from and the gold that's within. Zahav Yerushalayim, Asur Lishkoach, Hakdushat Haaretz, Shenoten Lanu Koach.